Did ministers play a key role in America's founding? Dan Fisher is a pastor and the author of Bringing Back the Black-Robed Regiment. He once said this, "The pastors in revolutionary America in the 18th century were critical to the effort to secure liberty in the colonies. They were the ones who found all the principles in Scripture that they had been preaching for years about just government and unjust government and tyranny and all these issues. They'd been preaching these issues for years in their pulpits. Many of them were involved in government." This is Focal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest right now is Dan Fisher, author again of the book called Bringing Back the Black-Robed Regiment. His website, by the way, is danfisherbrr.com, BRR meaning Black-Robed Regiment. Dan, welcome back to the program. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, Jerry, it's good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Sure. First of all, just how about a little bit of background, since I know you know a lot about America's founding and especially the ministers and particularly what were called the Black-Robed Regiment. How did you get interested in all this? And, I mean, I'm sure this isn't something you knew all your life. Just tell me a little bit about how you came about all this information.
Yeah, Jerry, I grew up in a pretty conservative family, and we were always people who believe that you can't separate your faith from your actions, including how you stand politically. So I was pretty outspoken politically even before I heard about the Black Regiment. And then in around 2007 or so, I heard about the Black-Robed Regiment, and I thought, my goodness, the only people I know of that wear robes are judges. And then I found out they were the preachers of the 1700s. So I started doing some research, and my goodness, I said, where's this been all of my life? And I've always been a lover of history. So, wow, how could I have not known anything about these guys? So I just kind of came across them in a talk show kind of like this, and then I started drilling down, doing my own research, and I was just blown away by what I found.
So what is the Black-Robed Regiment? What does that mean?
Well, it's actually a title that the British gave to the preachers. Oddly enough, it was an American, a Tory, who sided with the British named Peter Oliver, who was a judge in Massachusetts. He was the one who coined the phrase, and it referred to the black robes that they all preached in. In those days, most all preachers preached in black robes. It didn't matter whether you were Presbyterian, Lutheran, Baptist, Congregational. It just didn't matter. You preached in a black robe. And so this title was given to them to kind of single them out because they were, for lack of a better way of saying it, they were the firebrands. They were the ones who were stirring up the people to defend their liberty and their unalienable rights. And they connected biblical teaching with it. So they believed Christians had an obligation to stand up against tyranny. And the British hated them for it. In fact, the British ended up blaming the war on these preachers, and I'm not so sure they were pretty much correct. I think without these preachers, there would have never been the War of Independence as we know it.
Well, I know that there's a famous quote from somebody where he said, in Parliament, he said, "Cousin America has run off with a Presbyterian parson," that man being John Witherspoon, the president of Princeton, and he was a Presbyterian minister. Now, would he be part of what is called the Black-Robed Regiment? I mean, it's that kind of thing as well?
Yeah, he would be. He would be, Jerry. He never got active in the war effort itself as far as leading troops out onto the battlefield, which many of these pastors did, but they fought at different levels. He fought in the halls of Congress. Of course, they'd be the Continental Congress at that time. In fact, he was the only vocational pastor that we're aware of that signed the Declaration of Independence. But yeah, the one who said that was Horace Walpole. He was the son of the British Prime Minister, and we think he was referring to John Witherspoon, who was a real agitator. He was really for American independence and was encouraging preachers and their congregations to stand up and say no to the British.
There was a book that I read about half a year ago that really blew me away, and it's by Alice Baldwin. It was first written in the 1920s, and then she revised it in the 50s. But basically, it was all about the ministers in New England and the role that they played in, you know, essentially paving the way towards American liberty. And a lot of this all occurred long before 1776.
Oh, no, that's exactly right. And that is a huge mistake that is sometimes made, that people will hear about the Black Robe Regiment and they think, well, this is just a bunch of rabble rousers and they got all stirred up about the British and they wanted to separate and ended up going out and fighting. Actually, these men had been preaching these things since the first Great Awakening. And even before that, you can go back to the early 1700s and read these preachers, what they called election sermons. And they were dealing with these subjects, my goodness, many decades before you actually have the Continental Congress and the Declaration of Independence and then the ensuing war. And Alice Baldwin is one of the best sources. She is just evidence of the fact that research has been done for many years on this subject. It's just been suppressed. We haven't been taught it. It hasn't been taught from our pulpits. It's certainly not taught in schools. And sadly, it's not even taught in Christian educational institutions. And so we just don't know about it. But yeah, Alice Baldwin was a professor at Duke for the first half of the 20th century, and she was just marvelous. That book is still available. You can get reprints of it, and sometimes you can even pick up an original copy out there on eBay or somewhere on the Internet.
Hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because you have taken us back to even to the early 1700s, and yet she even shows, and other, you know, research shows, that these ideas really go back even as early as 1620 when the Pilgrims first came over. In fact, Alice Baldwin mentions, I just happened to see this in a footnote recently, this is why it's fresh to me, that in 1633, that's when the first Election Day sermon appeared, and that was in Massachusetts. So this tradition of Election Day sermons, which was, and by the way, the elections back then were usually annual affairs. So people were hearing the Word of God applied to government principles on a regular basis in Puritan New England.
Oh, that is exactly right. In fact, if you look at the Mayflower Compact, here's a bunch of Christians who are coming to North America, according to them, to spread the gospel to this unsettled land. And so they write the Mayflower Compact before they leave the Mayflower. And it is really the first governmental document drawn up in North America of self-governance and what we would call a republican form of government. So my goodness, yes, you can go all the way back to the roots of Christianity and see this whole thing. And so by the time you get the Pilgrims here to North America, like you just said, it's not very long until you've got preachers preaching and teaching their people that you cannot separate your religious convictions from your political activities. And that as Christians, we have to be salt and light. And their idea was that government is God's instrument, coming from Romans 13, that government is God's minister. Therefore, you need godly men who are leading this thing. So, yeah, there's no question that you can trace it right back to the very beginning of American history.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of people, let's say on the left, even the ACLU, People for the American Way, they will acknowledge that, okay, the Pilgrims, the Puritans, okay, we'll grant that they were religious. But by the time you get to the founding era, so in other words, jumping ahead to the 1770s, these were men of the Enlightenment, and they wouldn't share those same kind of religious convictions. But your research seems to say, no. These ministers who were ministers of the gospel in the 1770s, were definitely still believers in Jesus Christ, and they were active in, you know, the early American push for independence.
Oh, there's no question about it, Jerry, and I know that you're very much aware of many of these things, but let me just mention a few examples. The very first act of the Continental Congress was to have a prayer meeting. You know that happened in 1774 in what is called Carpenter's Hall, and they brought a local preacher in. His name was Jacob Duchesne, and they had this incredible prayer time after he read from Psalm 35. John Adams writes home to Abigail and says he had never seen a prayer have a greater impact. That's the first official act of the Continental Congress. So from the very beginning in the 1770s of what we would call the beginning of America as we know it as a republic, you've got them doing this. And then you've got in the Constitutional Convention, where everything was vapor locked, you've got old Benjamin Franklin, the oldest member there, stand up and say, hey, look, back when we were in the war, we regularly asked the help of God. And now all of a sudden, have we forgotten that great friend? We need to pray and open up our sessions with prayer. And so we've been sold a bill of goods about many of our framers and founders. I mean, Benjamin Franklin attended the church where Samuel Cooper was the pastor at Brattle Street in Boston. You got all of the, we just, Jerry, when we're not taught these things, eventually they disappear. And as you well know, you're all about trying to bring these facts back to the surface. But my goodness, the idea that these guys were deists, it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, for instance, if Benjamin Franklin was a deist, why in the world would he request that they pray to a God that isn't even listening? Because that's what deists believe. Yeah. It's all ridiculous. We've been lied to.
That's a great point. And by the way, even there, some people will say, well, the Constitutional Convention didn't, you know, yay or nay his request for prayer. But there was a variation of it that was accepted by them all, and they acted on that, and they did have prayer together. And that was to attend a worship service, a Christian worship service in a local church within a few days and pray together, which they did. And that's what happened. So so the spirit of what he asked for was answered.
No, you're right. But that's to ignore all of their actions before that and just simply say, well, we're just going to ignore that. They just didn't do what Franklin said. So see, they didn't believe in prayer. Well, then if you back up just a few years to their very first act in 1774, I mean, you know, the whole thing is this didn't happen in a vacuum. And unfortunately today we look at history through a very, very small lens, and we act like all of this took place in a vacuum, and it didn't. You have this long history of Christians acting upon their faith, and it influenced all of the framers and the founders. And I would not be silly enough to claim that all of the framers and the founders were born-again Christians, but I will be bold enough to say that they all had a pretty healthy respect for the Bible and its teachings and the God of the Bible. And it's obvious in their writings. It's just that people don't know what these guys wrote and said, and so therefore easily sold these half-truths that are told as lies, and then they, you know, here you have this godless America in some people's minds. It couldn't be anything further from the truth.
Okay, we have about a minute left or so. How about a comment about the Sons of Liberty? What does that phrase apply to, or is that more kind of almost a generic amorphous term that was pretty fluid?
Oh, goodness, no. The Sons of Liberty were men who were led by Samuel Adams, first cousin of John Adams. John Adams pretty much is responsible for getting the Declaration of Independence agreed upon. And he led them in Boston. And these were men, young and old, who believed in inherent individual rights. And they had a massive influence in what happened ultimately that leads up to the Continental Convention and the whole Declaration of Independence and then the war and then our winning our independence. So they played a vital role there in Boston especially.
All right, we have 30 seconds. Does America need to get back to its godly roots?
Oh, my goodness. Jerry, if we don't, the whole thing's going to collapse. If you remember, John Adams said that our Constitution was written only for a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate for the government of any other. And that's why everything's breaking apart today. We've left the moral foundations, and then we're surprised when this thing is coming apart. Of course it is. You can't have a self-governing people if they're not moral enough to govern themselves.
Wow. Okay, Dan Fisher, thanks so much for being with us. DanFisherBRR.com for more information. Dan, all the best.
Thank you, Jerry. God bless you. Thanks for having me.